Welcome to the AquariumMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 75, recorded August 15th, 2011. Hello, everybody! Okay, we have some, I think, pretty cool news. Like I said on the little Facebook note, whatever I said, it's super cool, peachy keen, spiffy stuff. And we are not going to tell you exactly what it is yet, but just know that on Friday we will be releasing a special 15-minute episode, an extra episode, that we think you guys will really like. We have something pretty special lined up for that.
So it should be fun.
Yeah, so watch for that on Friday. We're both very excited about it.
Yeah, so yeah, keep your ears skinned.
That sounds painful.
Okay, I guess it kind of does. Well,
I guess eyes peeled is pretty painful, too.
Yeah, that's all painful. So, it'll be a fun activity, though.
We like it.
Whatever we're doing. That secret thing. Okay. Now, I would just like to say that I'm sorry about our poor little
oh, what did
honey
we do?
Grew on me because he had built a bubble nest, and I came home from work, and I was still feeling a little bit, you know, tired and
distracted from work.
And so I poured a bunch of food on his bubble nest and destroyed it because, you know, they're golden pearls and they had oil content, disturbed the surface tension and all that, and ripped his bubble nest apart. And then I realized, oh no, I just dumped food on his bubble nest and ruined it after the fact.
Did he look offended at all?
I think he did. I may be imagining it, but he looked offended, and he's breeding coloration. He's a gorgeous fish.
He's very pretty.
But I've messed up his bubble nest, and he hasn't rebuilt one. We're not trying to breed him or anything. We only have one, but it's a beautiful fish. It's a great fish for a 10-gallon tank because it's so tiny.
It's a gorgeous fish.
Yeah. So tiny. It's only about, well, it's less than 2 inches long, but it's already an adult, and makes a great kind of a showcase fish in a 10-gallon tank.
Maybe he'll build another one, or maybe he's given up on the dating scene altogether, seeing as how his dating pool is non-existent.
Yeah, unless he wants to go for interspecies dating, which I guess he probably doesn't. All right, well.
Who do we have first? We have Dave in Logan.
Yeah, Dave had, when he sent this, he had just recently listened to our July 20th show when we talked about aquarium backgrounds. And he said he had a cool idea for backgrounds. He bought some insulated sheathing from Lowe's, the hardware store chain. You know, most of you probably mm-hmm. are familiar with that in the U.S., I imagine. I think it's
a hardware store.
I don't know if they have it outside the U.S., but...
But it's a big... It's like a big box hardware store for you, those of you not in the U.S.
Right. He said he purchased a sheet of this that was half an inch by 8 feet by 4 feet, and it cost him less than $8, and that's a lot of insulated sheathing mm-hmm. there. And he said that he thinks it makes the ideal background because it's extremely lightweight, so you can tape it on the back of the aquarium.
What exactly is it made out of?
I think it's like polystyrene.
Half an inch thick?
I think it's polystyrene.
Is that kind of like styrofoam?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. You can correct us if you're wrong, Dave, but I'm pretty sure what that is. And then he says he spray painted it for the back of a couple of his aquariums, and one of them he decided he didn't like the color, so when we talked about garbage bags, he thought he'd use a garbage bag, and so he wrapped the garbage bag around it and taped it, and because he stretched it lightly around the sheathing, the wrinkles in the plastic bag disappeared. It was easy to get rid of those.
Now, maybe I'm jumping the gun, maybe he's going to talk about this later in his mm-hmm. email, but why would you want an aquarium bag that's half an inch thick?
Ah, he does talk about that. Okay. He says that one advantage of using this sheathing is that it helps conserve energy by insulating one side of the tank. So if you have fish that, you know, you need a higher temperature, mm-hmm. or if you have your tanks in a really cool room, you could use that. You could also, I imagine, put it on the sides and the bottom of the tank and really insulate it and help keep it warm. So that's another advantage.
Is it flat when he buys it? I mean, I'm trying to envision this in my head here. How does he get something that thick to lay flat against the glass?
Something that thick? Well, it's really light because it's polystyrene.
Is it flexible, or is it stiff like styrofoam?
I think it's stiff like styrofoam, but maybe Dave could tell us. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. It's like polystyrene, which is the generic name for styrofoam material.
Okay.
Like, I'm pretty sure that's what it is, but I would be interested to find out if I'm wrong.
Did he send us some pictures?
I don't believe so.
Maybe he could send us some pictures we could put up on the resource. Yeah. For those of us, myself included, not familiar with all of our building materials,
but it
would be helpful to see what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah. And it sounds like a really good idea. I like how you can stretch out the garbage bag to make it look
taut.
Smooth. Yeah, that's a good idea, too. All right, next we've got...
We have... Brady.
Yep, Brady's also in Logan.
Oh, yeah. We should get together. They could have a fishy lunch.
Maybe they're in the Logan Aquarium Club. I don't know.
Maybe.
But he had a question about genetic dwarfism in fish, wondering if we had ever heard of it. And he's asking because he has a 2-year-old female ancestress, also known as bristlenose or bushy-nose plecos, that has topped out at 1 inch in length.
And wow.
That's really tiny.
What size of a tank is she in?
She's in a 20-gallon tank.
So she should be bigger than that. She's got plenty of room to grow, right?
Yeah, yeah. A 20-gallon tank, they can get to adult size. Females don't ever get very big, maybe 3 inches or so.
But bigger than an inch.
A lot bigger than an inch, usually, yeah. And he said that he tried to start breeding them about 3 years ago, and he purchased a pair of young calico bristlenose.
Mm-hmm.
And he raised them for about 6 months, and then they had their first batch of young. And he saw there were about 6 baby bristlenoses in the cave, and that's not unusual to have a small batch the first time, especially when they're fairly young like that. And the mother died without warning a few days later, and two of them ended up reaching adulthood of the fry. And so he had the father and 2 fry, and he kept all 3 in the same 20-gallon tank, and that's not overcrowding them, that's fine, and gave them algae wafers, romaine lettuce, cucumbers, etc., which is a pretty good diet,
mm-hmm.
should be... sufficient, and one of the males grew relatively quickly to about 4 inches, which is the same size as the father, and that's a little small for ancestors, but not unheard of. It's not, I've had,
you know, within the range of normality.
Yeah, they can grow, it's usually somewhere between 4 and 6, and they may have continued to grow after that. And he said the other hardly seemed to grow at all. And
that was the female?
And I think that was the female. And after about a year, they got some gill mites in the tank, and he wasn't sure what it was at first. And by the time he had figured out what it was, he had already lost half of the occupants of the tank, so I'm assuming there were other fish in there, beyond bristlenoses, including both of his adult male bristlenoses.
But he didn't lose the female?
But the female was still alive, and that was a year and a half ago, and she hasn't gotten any longer. She has filled out a bit, which is, you know, normal for them to fill out a bit. But he feeds her, gives her algae wafers, assorted vegetables, and so on. So it's not starvation.
Is there something in gill mites that can stunt growth?
See, I'm not sure about that. I wondered about that, or if it was perhaps a medication that the fish got that could have stunted her growth. That's possible.
Just
I don't know.
Just a bizarre mutation in that particular fish?
Well, this is the interesting thing. She seems very healthy. She's just not getting any bigger. And he's thinking it doesn't seem to be linked to environmental conditions, but there could be something he's missing here. Well, I looked this up, too, because I'd wondered about this, and I've had a few ancestors that didn't grow for long periods of time, and they eventually did, but sometimes they would go for a really long time without growing. So I decided to look up ancestors and dwarfism, see what I could find, and there are other people who have had similar experiences.
They just stay small for a long time and then they grow, or they just stay small?
Well, that's some of both, I guess.
Interesting.
So it may be that this fish is prone to stunting because of environmental factors that wouldn't stunt other fish, mm-hmm. or it could be that
there's a gene in there somewhere that could provide this mutation.
Yeah, maybe they have a genetic propensity.
So we could breed dwarfism. Teacup bristlenoses.
Teacup bristlenoses, yeah. And they'd be yappy.
And you could put a little pink bow up there and, you know, give it a dish that says princess on it.
And whenever your neighbors came by, they'd run up and gnaw on their ankles.
I
don't know. But this is, it's really interesting. And apparently, I wish I could tell you more, Brady, but apparently others are having experiences like yours. And I shared it with him in an email that I had one that didn't grow. I think I mentioned this one that didn't grow at all for about a year, and it was about an inch long, and then started growing.
Interesting.
And then another male that I had that topped out at 3 inches, which is not the same as one, but And he stayed smaller than that. He stayed much smaller than that for several years, and then suddenly started growing and reached 3 inches.
There's a thesis research paper for you.
So it is interesting, and
somebody do that.
Yeah, there you go. Well, thank you for sharing that with us, Brady. And if any of the rest of you have experiences with bristlenoses and dwarfism or other fish, let us know. I have seen that albino bristlenoses seem more prone to the slow-growing phenomenon or the dwarfing phenomenon. So, there you go.
Maybe there's something on the albino genes that's linked to growth or hormone production or something.
Could be. That would be interesting to find out. Now, Stuart has got something for us. He put up a picture of his background. Now, you know, we've been on the subject of backgrounds again. It's coming back to that from when we did that before. And it looks really nice. So check it out. We'll put the link on the resources page, but it's also on the Facebook page. You can just go straight there and see it if you like. And he's got it set up in his shell dweller tank. Mm-hmm. So it looks really cool. So check that out. And Carlos's angelfish, we haven't talked about them for a little while, but he's got a group of fry, and they're doing well. So if you want to follow the saga of Carlos's angelfish and see how they've been doing, check it out on Facebook. He's been updating us periodically on how they're doing. So I'm excited. I wish we could be breeding angelfish right now. I don't have a tank space for it right now. But I miss angelfish.
That's kind of an applicable sentence to a great many fish projects, though.
Yes, it is.
We wish we could do this right now, but we don't have the tank space.
No, we don't have the tank space or the time or whatever. Yeah. But I am glad that Carlos is doing it and he's enjoying it, and that's fun.
We have a question from Connie next.
Yes. Connie is wondering about some black stuff in her aquarium. She's got a 90-gallon tank with 3 small goldfish in it. So that's what seems like a pretty light bioload. I mean, small is a relative term, but I'm imagining they're not gargantuan.
In 90 gallons, they could be bigger than small and still be okay.
Be okay, right. And the ammonia, nitrate are both zero. Nitrate are both zero. Nitrate is 15, which is not bad at all. The pH is 7.4, and the fish seem healthy. That's pretty good. It has 2 large Chemipure Elite filter media in separate filters, and there's black stuff growing on everything. And so I asked Connie about this, and a couple of questions, asked if she could send some pictures, asked if this stuff was velvety or pearly, if it was growing directly on the substrate and other surfaces, and because I was wondering if it might have been some sort of cyanobacteria. Cyanobacteria are also known as blue-green algae, and they're not exactly really algae or really bacteria, kind of similar to both in some ways. They're sort of a photosynthetic primitive bacteria.
Okay.
And I was wondering if that's what it was. And I, some years ago, I had some problems with that stuff. And I was wondering if it was more hairy or fuzzy, because it could be like black brush or black beard algae. And so I asked more about the lighting and live plants and so on. And Connie said, it's a fish only, no plants. It's been established since 2007, and the filter's been going fine.
It's been around for a while. How long has the black stuff been there?
Well, let's see. She said there's usually green algae, and that's under control, and has a UV sterilizer, but that's not in use right now, and changes about 20% of the water every 4 weeks, based on the fact that it's a large tank with a few fish. The light is a single 48-inch, 40-watt T8 power glow that was replaced in July, and that's key right there, because I would have asked, you know, when did you last replace the bulb? Mm-hmm. Or if I had asked that, and she had said, you know, it's been a year and a half, or it's been 2 years, that'll sometimes precipitate problems with algae. But so it's just been replaced. And Connie did a Google search, as I suggested, to look at some cyanobacteria, and wasn't exactly sure if that's what it was or not. And the Chemipure Elite is a good filter medium that can help remove a lot of excess things in the water that shouldn't be there. So that's good, although it can't, of course, remove everything that shouldn't be there. She tries not to overfeed, and this is a really puzzling problem. It's growing on the tube to the Everclean Aqua Filter. She's wondering if the substrate is too large because the Everclean Aqua Filter is not working as well as it should. Oh, look, we've got to take a break, and then we'll resume.
Oh, the break. this isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
All right, we're back. And we're talking about Connie's problem with this black stuff that's growing on your aquarium. She did say that it's hard to scrub off, which is interesting.
So is it kind of crusty?
It seems to be kind of crusty. She's tried bleaching it off of some surfaces, and even that's tricky.
Wow.
Which is weird, which kind of makes me think it may not be cyanobacteria, but it's hard to tell.
Did she send us some pictures?
She did, and the pictures, I looked at the pictures, and I would say it's probably not black brush or black beard algae. I can rule that out. I can't rule out the cyanobacteria, but I can't give a definite positive on
it
either.
Seeing it in person.
It's tricky. Even then, it's hard to identify sometimes. I would say there are a few possibilities. One thing that we could try, you might try, you could put on the UV sterilizer and see if that helps from waterborne spreading. So if you could mechanically remove it as much as possible from some of your surfaces and then put the UV on again or run the UV to see if that helps keeping it from spreading through the water. It could still spread on surfaces, but it might limit things somewhat. You could also try putting in some, because we're not sure it's cyanobacteria. Very few algae crew creatures will eat cyanobacteria, but there are some creatures that will eat algae that looks kind of like cyanobacteria. You might try putting in an olive nerite that's big enough for your goldfish not to eat. See what happens there, or even a couple of them, and see what they do to it.
Would it help if she put some real plants in for a while to soak up nutrients?
Yeah, that was something I was going to suggest also, so I'm glad you brought that up. You could try doing that. I mean, goldfish are only tolerant of certain plants, and there are a couple of different ways you could do that. You could put in some plants that goldfish tend to be tolerant of, but most plants that, many plants that goldfish are tolerant of are going to need a little more light than that. It's only about, it's less than 1 watt per gallon, significantly less than 1 watt per gallon in that tank. So I would say, you might want to try some floating plants that goldfish are not going to swallow and, you know, gulp up immediately. You could try, that might help reducing the nitrate, because there's enough nitrate in there. It's not a high nitrate tank, but there's enough nitrate in there for, obviously, for this goo, whatever it is, to grow. And if you might try limiting that by putting some plants in there. Of course, your goldfish might tear them to shreds.
Sorry, my chair is being very squeaky.
That's okay. And they might not tear them to shreds. You could try, and I know some people have tried this, you put a breeding trap or some other sort of protected area that the goldfish can't get to, like a net breeder, in the tank up near under the light, and put some duckweed in it.
And it'll soak up the extra?
It can help soak up the extra nutrients, and it grows so fast that you can scoop out a little bit of it and give it to the fish, and they'll eat it.
And be happy about it.
And be happy about it, and it's healthy for them. But you can also dump a lot of it out. You just scoop a lot of this duckweed out, and then that's your nutrient export. You're taking nutrients out of the water in the form of duckweed.
So whatever this biomass, black, yucky stuff is, doesn't have it to grow.
Doesn't have it to grow. That might be worth a try, too. Something else you could try is putting pothos. It's also known as devil's ivy. It has a lot of other names, too. You can try rooting some, which is it's a terrestrial plant. And I remember Robert from Michigan talked about using some in his turtle tank. But if you can get it to, you could try pumping some out into something above the tank and then having the plants grow in that and then having the water circulate back into the tank, like a veggie filter, and they can suck some nutrients out too. But I might try the duckweed one just to see how it goes in a net breeder or something. It doesn't need a whole lot of light.
And duckweed should be fairly easy to get a hold of.
It's very easy to get a hold of. It won't overtake the rest of your tank because the goldfish will eat it like crazy. And that might be worth a try. A couple of things there that you could try. But you could also try the olive neurites, as I mentioned. This is a bit controversial with goldfish.
Maybe try a few of them together.
Yeah, several of them. And this is a something a bit controversial, but you could try a bristlenose in there. Some people don't like to put them with goldfish.
We have one with ours currently.
They've never had a problem
together.
But they did have a problem with one bristlenose in the past that we removed because they had a problem with it. So it's hard to tell.
Remember, they had problems with the Siamese algae eaters.
Yeah, and that was a problem a long time ago, too. So that's a bit controversial, but the olive neurites won't cause any problem, that's for sure. And you could look into that and try a couple of those suggestions and see if they help. I would also step up the water changes, probably, because even though with such a large tank and so few fish, it's probably okay from the fish's standpoint. I mean, the nitrates at 15 is not that bad. But if you were to step it up, you'd be reducing the nutrient load quite a bit that's in the water, and so reducing the amount of nutrients available to this goo that's growing. So that might be worth a shot. And one thing you mentioned about the EverClean aqua filter not working as well as you'd hoped. Recently, I decided to uproot our EverClean aqua filter to see how it was doing. And this is the interesting thing. It seemed like the flow had been reduced for a little while, and so I wanted to see what was going on. So I pulled it up, and there were some bacterial mats growing down under there. It didn't look like the detritus, just normal detritus from the tank. It seemed like it had sucked that in, and the bacteria had been eating and digesting things down there, but making some bacterial mats, which actually reduced the flow. So I was a bit concerned about that.
Took it all out.
Right, so we removed it from the tank for the time being to see how it goes with just the other filters. And I'm not sure exactly.
I think the fish are happier.
But, yeah, it looks like everything's going well without it right now. So, I don't know. I think there may need to be some improvements made in the filter before it's completely ready to do what we thought it was going to do, because it seemed to work fine for quite a while, but now it's and it was still working. I mean, there weren't any serious problems in the tank, but the flow had decreased, and I don't think it was pulling things out as it should. So yeah, there may be some things I need to ask Joe about, you know, what his experience has been with that, and see if he can give us some pointers on that. Alright.
Okay, let's move on to Jason.
All right, Jason is in Long Island, New York, and he wants some cherry red shrimp, but he can't find them anywhere, and also known as red cherry shrimp, they're known as both. And he said he's iffy on getting them on eBay or AquaBid. Where else can I find them? Why are they so hard to find?
No, I'm wondering why he doesn't want to get them online, if he's had previous negative experiences with those, or usually it seems to work fine. I mean, I suppose it depends on who you buy from.
Right. I mean, it's important to buy from someone with a good reputation and so on. And some creatures are more, you know, prone to difficulties in being shipped and so on. I've had really good luck with cherry shrimp myself, both shipping them and receiving them. They seem to do fine. But I would say if you'd rather not do that, here are two options for you. Try going to a local aquarium store. I'm sure they have some good ones in your area or close enough. And even if you have to go to
some other part of New York,
New Jersey, or something like that, I know they have some good aquarium stuff going on in New Jersey. And it's not too terribly far, hopefully, that you could plan a trip and go to a local aquarium store there, a specialist one. But before you go, actually check and see if they have them, or maybe even special order them. A lot of aquarium shops are really happy to special order something for you because they know other people are going to want it too. Mm-hmm. And so I would suggest, you know, calling around and saying, I would like some red cherry shrimp. Do you ever get them in? Would you consider special ordering them? I've special ordered things before from pet stores, and they're usually too happy to do it. All they have to know is that somebody's willing to buy, mm-hmm. and then they'll be happy to do it. So that's worth a shot. Another one is to look up your local aquarium club online. I mean, I've found that to be quite fruitful on occasion. You look them up, and maybe they have a website with a trading post on it. And then you can just say, this is the area where I am at, and I would like to get some red cherry shrimp. And they may either have an auction that you can go to a couple times a year, or even more often.
You can just hook up with an individual person.
Or you can just, find someone, just put up, if they do have a trading post, put up a want to buy red cherry shrimp, and that may may be helpful for you. So hopefully that can help. I think part of the reason they have been waxing and waning in popularity in different areas is because they are really easy to breed. They're beautiful, and people are interested in them, but once they're really, you know, people start breeding them, then they have so many they don't know what to do with them. If I lived closer to you, I'd give you some of mine. I have plenty. But there you go. Hopefully that'll give you some ideas, Jason, and thanks for contributing. I think it's the first time he's ever done that.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining. And I think Connie's talked to us before, hasn't she? And everyone else has talked to us before, too, that has contributed today. But I just want to make sure let everybody know that we appreciate it. All right. Now, we need to talk about Juliet's situation. Juliet from Paris, France.
With the cottony mouth and blurs.
Yeah. She said that the few days in the hospital tank in slightly salted water and warmer temperatures seems to have done the trick. They're doing better. I'm glad to hear that. And the hospital tank didn't have a filter, so she did a few water changes in there, and she also did water changes in the main tank and reduced the salt slowly in the hospital tank and then put them all in, and everybody was fine except that one that had remained in the tank and died. And she points out that it's a pretty scary prospect that she could have lost all 40 if she hadn't started treating them, so that was good. And she says, one cannot stress enough how important it is to watch your fish regularly and really get to know them. Very true. That's extremely important. And she said, this is a really interesting thing she pointed out. In breeding her endlers, she has a deal with her local fish store where they trade endlers for shrimp because she's really interested in shrimp now. But the dealer always wants more males than females in terms of endlers, probably because they're more colorful and they sell better. And she said her first batches were almost all females, so she has tried experimenting with the temperatures that she raises them at. And it's been around 10 spawns, and she's noticed a difference. She said that lower temperatures, she has about 70% males. And with higher temperatures, it's about 70% female.
Now, these are not the only fish that influences. Is that just for live bearers, or does it have an influence on egg layers as well?
Well, I wish I knew more about this. I do know that I've had, you know, anecdotal situations like this with guppies, where temperature has influenced the gender ratio, or seemed to. And she points out that this was not really a serious scientific experiment, but it's working for her, and so if someone's keeping endlers, they might want to give it a try.
Well, also, it works with some reptiles,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it does. We used to keep leopard geckos, and leopard geckos work like that, too. Mm-hmm. Temperature determines their gender, and it's the same with many other reptiles and other creatures, so it's an interesting thing, and I wonder if anyone else has had that same experience. If you had, then, you know, let us know about that.
Now, was it that it's just live bearers that this works with, or does it work with some egg layers too, or some of both? Or,
you know, I don't really
know. I mean, reptiles obviously lay eggs.
Right. Well, not all reptiles do, though. There are quite a few live bearing reptiles as well. But I don't know. I don't know enough about it. I wish I did. I wish I knew more. From a, you know, rigorous scientific standpoint. As I say, anecdotally, I have some experiences that are similar with guppies, but I couldn't say really, and I don't have any empirical data to back anything up or be able to make any sort of claim, but I do think that's really interesting. So thank you for sharing that. She also had a couple of questions. She said, I never seem to get a perfect answer for these. I don't know if we have a perfect answer, but we can attempt to address them. She says, if using a dechlorinator like TetraSafe or any of the other brands, is its action immediate, or do you have to mix it in the bucket and wait a while, and how long is a while? Real newbie question, but you know that not one guy in a single store knew the answer. Well, I think I've talked about this, but it's been a while. One thing is that I don't pre-mix it. I think it's ideal to do so. I think there will be... You'll get the chlorine and chloramine, depending on which one you have, more neutralized if you do that. You pre-mix it in a container before adding it to the tank, and I think...
And let it sit there?
Yeah, a lot of people wait
and
24 hours.
24 hours.
But I don't think it's necessarily, you know, vital to do that. I think you could probably do 15 minutes, and you'd probably have handled most of it. But then, that said, I never do it. Well, almost never. I usually just run the tank straight from the tap and add the conditioner as I do so, so it lands in the flow. That's what I do. And it's never been a problem. I have fish that, you know, are perfectly healthy and spawn in water that I do that in. I don't think it's too much of an issue. So I don't think you have to worry about it too much. I do think that most of the time, in fact, in a lot of water supplies, and it varies from place to place, of course, but in a lot of water supplies, you don't always even need to do it. And I have gone through periods where I didn't do it, as long as I was doing a water change of 20% or less. But it's always safest because you never know what's coming through the pipes, or if they're doing extra cleaning with the pipes, you know, they had to do some work on the pipes. Right. And if they had to do work on the pipes and they had to run a bunch more chloramine through it to disinfect it, and then that's the day you do your fish, you know, you change your fish water, that can be bad and dangerous. So it's always best to add it. But I've never had a problem just adding it. Never any fish deaths.
Straight when you're changing the water.
Right. Never any fish deaths or even fish stress that I can tell attributable to doing that. So that's my answer. I don't know that it's the perfect answer, but that's what I do. And her last question concerns corys, or Corydoras catfish. And she's wondering what causes the loss of barbels in some corys.
Can I just say that barbels is an incredibly fun word to say.
It is. I kind of like that word. It's fun.
Sounds so like the Jabberwocky.
So is Corydoras.
Burble, burble, burble.
Corydoras barbels.
Corydoras barbels.
See, it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
She had some... She has some Trilineatus and Julie corys that develop red sores around their mouths and die and then... Or lose their barbels and they survive.
I'm just going to giggle every time it's you say barbel.
And she says that they never grow back, even though some people have reported that they do, and that her bronze corys never have this problem. And she has been told that it was caused by sharp substrate, which I've heard too, which she doesn't believe, or bacteria, which seems more likely, or maybe just it's because they're more sensitive to the hard water conditions in Paris. And she said the ones that have lost their barbels have now been with her for years. And so she's wondering what we think
about this. They never had any problem
before? Well, they lost their barbels, and then they've stayed around.
Oh,
the ones
okay.
that did survive have stayed around for a long time. And she's wondering if there's a treatment for the sick ones, and what to do in the future before buying more of these. And she only has two Trilineatus, and really feels that corys are happier in bigger groups. I agree with that. And she said that this happens to a lot of her friends with really well-cycled, well-established tanks, and they take every precaution when they're acclimating them with the drip method and so on, and they still get this problem, and she's frustrated about it. I can understand why you'd be frustrated. I don't quite understand the situation myself. I've heard the sharp substrate story. I have some dwarf corys, pygmy corys actually, on fluorite, and they're fine. They've been there for months on fluorite, and their barbels are all fine. So
is fluorite sharp?
It's kind of sharp, yeah. And I don't think it's bothered them at all. And before that, they were on Tahitian moon sand, which is also kind of sharp. And that doesn't bug them either. So I think I'm kind of with you that sharp substrate doesn't necessarily cause this problem. It could be that sharp substrate in combination with something else does. I don't know. But
so if something else is already there, maybe sharper substrate compounds it.
Could be. But I'm not sure.
It's like Corey canker sores?
I guess my answer is kind of that I don't know, but I wish I did, and I turn it out to our listeners who keep corys and see if anybody has any ideas, because I'd love to help, but I'm not sure. I do know that, you know, pygmy corys don't spend as much time on the substrate as some of the other corys. They tend to swim in open water a little more. But if anybody has any insights for Juliet about this, that would be great, because I wish we could help more, but I'm at a loss for the situation myself. And then we do have another email.
From Mick.
Yeah, Mick has two things to point out. He saw his first baby assassin snail this week.
Yay!
So the substrate and everything seemed to be working. And he says it's about the size of a petit pois pea. So it's been around for a while because they start out a lot smaller than that. So, and he's hopeful that there will be more. And if you've seen one, rest assured you're probably going to get more. So congratulations on that. He said also the pictures from the last week's show worked on the resources page. You can see them. I still don't know why the other ones
weren't
working.
Mick was the one who was having trouble getting the pictures come up, but we haven't heard from anybody else having about picture that. Problems.
Right. And we had he said he had a very adventurous fire-bellied newt that they found making its way toward the door. It was on the floor. It had gotten out of the tank, survived a fall of 14 feet, and crossed
wow.
the living room out into the front hall before it was being discovered. So he now put it in a lockable
terrarium. Going on a trip.
Yeah. He had to put it in a lockable terrarium, so hopefully that won't happen again. That's kind of an interesting experience to see, isn't it? All right, well, we're going to have to wait through a couple other things. Andreka had a great question. Her question was, what are the top 10 things to avoid in fish stores? Her experience.
Get to that next time.
Yeah, her experience basically was using sand as a substrate and then finding out that that's what was causing problems with their impeller and their filter. So that was just one experience. So I want to ask you all, I'm compiling a list, but what things would you avoid in a fish store that you would never buy that is for sale in a fish store for use by fish? And with that, we shall sign off. Thank you to all of our contributors, both new and returning. And hopefully you all have a very fishy week.
And tune in on Friday for our special treat for you.
And that's all for now. Best fishes.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.